Well, as we sit here, we realize that we are presented this evening with the story of the birth of Jesus. And within that story, even the telling of the story, well, there's a further story itself. It's sort of the life imitates art, imitates life sort of thing. The Russian gifts when you open a box and there's another one, another one, another one. You see, it's because the birth narratives, the stories of Jesus, they are stories of consciousness. And they're drawing us in, and we're becoming part of the experience each time we go deeper into the story and the meanings of the story and the narrative. And that experience of the growth in consciousness, the ability of the Christ consciousness to appear for us, well, that's infinite. The story's never going to end. There is, in fact, no boundary. There's no boundary between the birth narrative, the Christ consciousness experience, and our lives. We are necessarily drawn into the story. And we can find that we get from the birth of Jesus as a story or narrative to the birth of Christ consciousness in just that way. It's a deeper meaning. And then to the birth of Christ consciousness within ourselves. And that is indeed a wonderful message. But it does not quite come to us in a meaningful way if we just look at it with just words or with just a formula. All of these things, they don't lend themselves to us really truthfully understanding them as if they were a mathematical formula. No, we need a story. We need a narrative. We need something that's flesh and blood that we can relate to and say, ah, that's us. I recognize that. I can adopt that into my daily life and produce the very transformation that we're looking for, the very transformation from living in a human material existence to a spiritual one. Recognition of our true existence is that we are spiritual beings. We are of God, infinite and all loving. Looking for some material for which to base this on, I thought about going to theological libraries. I thought about studying hard on the books all week. And it came to me that there is nothing more ubiquitous as a message of the Christmas spirit than a Charlie Brown Christmas. Lighten up, people. We're going to have some fun this evening. We all know the plot. We all know the story. It's been running on air at Christmas time since 1965, almost 60 years. Those of us who are older than 60, but barely, can recall its first running on the air, its first run, so to speak. Those of us who might be in our 70s or 80s, may recall showing it to our children when it first came out. It has become a part of our fabric. It's our cultural DNA. It is part of us. And the plot is worth exploring for just a bit, because we will see here on Christmas Eve, a time intended to be festive, that it really does have a spiritual import to us. It's a far deeper meaning than just a children's cartoon, trust me. The plot opens, of course, with a human being who is depressed. He views himself as a natural-born loser. Don't we all, if we're honest, feel that way sometimes? Some of us more so than others. It's really only a matter of degree. We can see things going on in the world that are strange to us, that we are not a part of, that for some reason or another, we are made to feel as if we are on the outside. We question people's motives, the motives of society in general, and we find we are not sometimes on the upside of things. And so we naturally relate to Charlie Brown. We naturally share with him empathy. Empathetically, we feel his painful longing for "I just don't understand Christmas." Or "What is the real meaning of Christmas?" Or better still, his expression of "Why, when everyone else is filled with excitement and joy, am I depressed?" But we understand that. We move with that. We feel it. It is a part of us such that we have no difficulty at all relating to Charlie Brown. But that's not the only character we relate to. There's a part of us that is like Linus, sitting there sucking on our thumb, holding our security blanket, philosophizing about the grand scheme of things. And then, of course, there's a part of us that relates to Sally. Who doesn't put together a Christmas wish list? Who doesn't say, "All I want is what I have coming to me. All I want is my fair share." Which of us aren't like Lucy, demanding real estate, holding out a psychiatric booth for 5 cents? I dare say at any given time, we can relate to Charlie Brown, Lucy, Sally, and Linus all in 1 second. And of course, there's Violet, the inner critic. We relate to Pigpen, who can't make a snowman without creating dirt. We relate to Frida, worrying about her naturally curly hair. And those of us with a musical bent can probably relate to Schroeder. And who among us cannot relate to Snoopy, the wise guy, smart aleck, who sort of has it all figured out? We relate to him in a different way, though. We relate to him with a sense of awe, notwithstanding the fact that he is, after all, a beagle. Don't we want to be cool like Snoopy? And we see the scene opens. In an effort to cure Charlie Brown's depression, he's invited to take part as the director, no less, of a school play. Now, you do find out what the plot of the school play is. I never have, and I've been watching the thing for 60 years. The play never really gets off the ground. We do know that Charlie Brown is looking at the play with some sort of disgust. It's filled with music, wild dancing, nothing having anything to do apparently with Christmas. And so he decides, let's get a tree, a Christmas tree. Now there's an interesting concept for you, for I will often relate to trees from a spiritual side of life. We know that a tree displays all of the wonders of the natural universe. It seemingly out of nowhere pulls its nutrients from the ground, draws energy from the sun, and keeps itself healthy by having its functions in just that way. Now at the tree lot, there are no real trees. There's a whole series of aluminum trees. I'm young enough to have never seen an aluminum tree, but I understand that they are no longer made. The only real tree on the lot is one, and it's a small, sad, pathetic-looking sapling. The tree is almost of the same character as Charlie Brown himself. Sad-looking, lonely-looking, depressed-looking even. Nonetheless, Charlie Brown relates to that tree and brings it back to the musical theater, where he is given what the British would call the not-so-respectful raspberry. He's booed, he's hissed. He is told in no uncertain terms that he is a natural-born loser. I believe that was expressed. Screaming out in an apparent fit of pique, he cries, "Can anybody explain the meaning of Christmas to me?" And Linus steps forth. "Lights, please." And he recites the Annunciation narrative from Luke. "And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid." And the angel said to them, "Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. You shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger." And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men." And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us." And they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all that they heard, it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen as it was told unto them. Excited, perhaps inspired by what he has just heard, Charlie Brown takes the tree out of the theater and brings it back and puts a gigantic Christmas ball on it from Snoopy's doghouse, which Snoopy the dog has won first prize, puts the ornament on the tree and it bends over, seemingly dead, and he cries out that he has killed it. Now hold that thought. Hold that thought right there, and let's step out of the narrative and go to the creation of this cartoon in the first place. During the making of the Charlie Brown series itself, the very making of the episode went through the exact same trajectory that was displayed for us in the show. Here's how it plays out. At the time that it's about to air, none of the sponsors liked the idea, but they had already committed to it. Like Lucy, having already committed to having Charlie Brown as the director, they were already locked in. They felt stuck with it. And they expressed that, as Charlie Brown would say, in no uncertain terms. They felt that they had just backed a loser. None of them liked the first cut. None of them liked the overtly religious theme, a Christmas special with a religious theme. Who would have thought? None of them liked the jazz from Vince Guaraldi. None of them liked the idea. They finally put together what's known as the director's cut, and they showed it a few days later before airing. Bill Melendez was one of the creative forces behind it. This was his baby. The very person who created the show, he watches the director's cut. He becomes so distraught at what they had created that he says, "Oh my God, we've killed it." And he doesn't mean he killed it in the show business way, like he really hit a big number. He means, "Oh my God, we've killed it." Just like Charlie Brown cried out, "Oh my God, I've killed the Christmas tree." They meant they killed the idea. They killed the script. You can't kill Christmas, though. This might have been what Mary felt like. Let's go a little deeper in 2,000 years prior to her perspective. Here's this woman comes along, minding her own business, presumably. And then God comes along and fills her with a child and puts her in one heck of a predicament. She gets told to deliver this baby. Where? Not in a hospital, not with doctors. No Pitocin, no epidural, no anesthesia. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the birth of a child, but it is sort of like pulling a piano through a pinhole. Not even a sterile environment, a manger, straw, where the animals are. And then at the end of his ministry, well, towards the end of his ministry, people are calling him insane. And then he's crucified. And you can imagine what she's thinking. Oh my God, this great idea. They've killed it. Let's go back to the story. Charlie Brown thinks he's killed the Christmas tree. He thinks he's killed Christmas, which is, of course, impossible. But that's the way he feels. But what happens? Well, the same thing that happened in real life with the script. People then bandied about it. And with the tree, Linus wraps his blanket. And the whole gang comes out and decorates the tree from Snoopy's doghouse. And with that sense of love, the tree comes to life. And it is, in fact, a glorious and beautiful Christmas tree after all. And the show ends with them yelling, "Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown," and singing, "Hark the Herald Angels Sing." And as life imitating art, the show, forecast to be a bust, is aired on CBS in December of 1965. And to so much acclaim, the show has never stopped airing ever since. In fact, I just read of a hubbub where the broadcasters were upset and people were upset because now you had to pay Apple to watch the thing. And, you know, they now make a special dispensation for it for PBS. That's how much acclaim it came to. No, Mr. Melendez, you did not kill the Charlie Brown Christmas special. You brought it to life. Now, I don't know if Charles M. Schulz, the creator of the Peanuts cartoon series, was a metaphysical Christian. He did have some rather complex religious views. I don't know if he was metaphysical, but he sure gets close. You see, what is on display in that cartoon and what is on display in the real life world of the folks who made the cartoon, and then going on in the consciousness of us who watch the cartoon, who know Luke, and who draw the inferences from it, why, we can see that this whole story is really just another form of the birth narrative of the Christ. Now, the birth narratives, they were not drafted until at least two generations after the crucifixion. The birth narrative with the wonder and all of the manger was drafted after Christ had already, after Jesus had already been crucified. Mary had already felt that it was a bust, this great conception that she had. And it wasn't, because we're all here 2,000 years later. The birth narratives, though, draw their validity not only from the eternal truths that they convey and express, but as theologian, see, I did do some theology work. Theologian E.F. Scott has written in his book entitled The Validity of the Gospel Record. These birth narratives came together from a whole series of anecdotal discussions that were being had around the community of the followers of Jesus. And it was these followers who experienced the energy of the resurrected Jesus, whose energy is experienced long after his supposed death. And so the birth narratives come about because people want to know, who is this Jesus? As Marcus Borg wrote, what was he like? And we don't get there without flesh and blood. We don't get there without a human being that we can relate to. We don't get there without some relational source. And so what we are looking for, and what the common theme is in the birth narratives, is a metaphysical lesson. It is the growth, the spark, the initiation of the birth, if you will, of the consciousness of the experience of God incarnate as us, as individualized expressions of God, as is stated in our divine side statement of being. And we look for elements of the birth of this new idea, this concept that we can overcome, and in fact do overcome, all apparent discordant conditions. And we do so through the Spirit of God expressed in us through love. You see, the Charlie Brown special is a birth narrative. Within Charlie Brown is the spark that he is not a natural born loser, but an individualized expression of God, just waiting to be realized and then nurtured. And the realization of it comes on Christmas Eve, after the school play is so essentially decimated to the point where it becomes irrelevant. And all of the characters in their various disparate and discordant roles come together in unison, put together their love, decorate the tree, and bring it back to life, and express their love for Charlie Brown now as one of them, not apart from them. It is this Christmas magic, this birth of the Christ consciousness within, that allows Sally to drop her greedy wish list, that allows Lucy to drop her need for real estate, allows Violet to drop her critic and criticisms of Charlie Brown. And it allows Charlie Brown to come into the fold, into the community. What we have here on display is nothing other than a primitive Christian community that existed right around the time of the first century, where people were banding together in groups to express love and to experience the Christ energy. And we who sit here 2,000 years or more later can adapt from that and learn from it and experience it as well. You might be thinking, can you give me a real life example from today? Why? Yes, I can. As many of you know, during the week, I run a law practice, and it is filled with experiences that I can practice on and bring out here. Many years ago, I can only talk about this because it was many years ago, I was driving to a court case and I expected it to go badly. I was in fact feeling just like Charlie Brown. I was feeling like a natural born loser. After all, in a court case, there's a winner and there's a loser. 50% of the time, I'm going to feel like Charlie Brown. I was feeling like Bill Melendez. Oh, I thought I'm killing this case. And I don't mean in the good show business way. I was feeling like Joseph and Mary must have felt with the baby Jesus on the outside of things. As I was driving to the courthouse, I began to contemplate the trees on the highway. Some of them looked like saplings. Some of them were big and robust. How does the tree do that? Well, first of all, the trees don't judge each other. They don't look at each other and say, you, tree, are a natural born loser. Me, I am not. No, that's a curse left over to us from the old Adam and Eve days in the Garden of Eden. For we have decided, we think we can make a judgment and a determination of what's good and what's bad. And we've made up all these constructs, and they're in our, you know, multi-generational DNA, and it does us no good whatsoever. In fact, it traps us. No, I was thinking the trees in nature don't sit around making judgments about each other. Who is worthy, who isn't. They just are there. And they do it miraculously too. We don't see the action. We know it happens because we study science. We know they pull up nutrients from the ground. We know they use the photosynthesis from the sky. And we know that combination of the two puts itself on display in a perfect demonstration of what we would call God in action. As I contemplated that, I decided, well, I could be like the trees too and draw on my source. And I spoke to God and I said, God, come to my assistance. Lord, make haste to help me. And that's all I said. I carried on to the court proceeding, and it was going as I expected it would. I put on all the evidence that I had drummed up over the past 3 years, and the other side did what they were supposed to do, and they were knocking me down left and right. And I felt bad. They felt they had the upper hand. I thought they might have been right. And they were gloating about it, too. But in an instant, when the jury verdict came back and it was announced, almost as if Santa Claus had winked his eye and touched his nose, the verdict came back in my favor. Our side had won. I saw the dejected looks on my opponents, but here's the miracle. I loved them anyway. because they didn't lose and I didn't win. Nor would I have lost, nor would they have won had it gone the other way. We're just going through life together. We were just the tree that needed to be wrapped with the blanket of love. And I could see that. And that was the miracle. That for me was a realization of Christ consciousness within. And as it is with all of us in all times everywhere, each one of us should be running around looking for that little sapling tree, whether it's an actual tree or that part of ourselves. We should be looking for the manger. We should be looking for the birth of the Christ consciousness within, for that is where it is, and it does produce a miraculous result. Now, the actual birth of Jesus historically continued along this very same theme, that theme of recognizing within the discord and healing it. For you will remember that the birth was being foretold by the prophet Isaiah. The land was being occupied by strangers. This time it was the Roman Empire. This time the churches, the synagogues, were facilitating the empire because they were charged with keeping the Jewish people in line, making sure that they accepted the notion of occupation from Rome. They did not want the rabble coming up and realizing that they were being enslaved, and actually that the occupying empire was doing nothing for them or their land. Meanwhile, the kingdoms of the Jewish people are themselves divided. We have the tribes of Israel to the north, and you have the tribes of Judah to the south. Metaphysically, this is what goes on in our daily human consciousness. What goes on within us is not only the Charlie Brown Christmas special, not only a lawyer's court case, but the very history of the Jewish occupation. Internally and metaphysically, we have divided kingdoms. The difference is the differentiation between the heart of the feeling nature that we have and the mind. The heart and the mind are always at war, just as they were and they are so now, just as they were 2,000 years ago. For the heart knows it's not right to be occupied. The heart knows it's not right to work for a few dollars and not have a life to enjoy. But the mind says, wait a minute, we got to put a roof over our heads. We need gas to get to work. So we need money to get to work to make money. There we go. That's how the mind is working for us. And we have our own internal synagogue telling us, God will come and do the right thing. Pay your tributes, keep your head down, and wait for it. Now, can we really put our feelings to one side in this way? Do we really need to do that and realize and think that we need a roof over our head? So let's subvert our feelings and keep them down for a minute. And yet here we are, and we don't feel good about that. We are here wondering why we are doing this. We're saying exactly what Charlie Brown said. Can anybody explain Christmas to me? Which is another way of saying, can anybody explain life to me? And why do we do what we do? And it is at that point, that very point, that the Annunciation news comes, the announcement of the birth of Jesus in the manger with the shepherds, the angels amazed, comes upon us. We realize how there is a different way, perhaps, of doing things. And can we capture that? And can we deal with that? And can we conduct ourselves with it right here and right now and not wait any longer? And the answer is touching the Christ consciousness within as our guide. Joel Goldsmith's Christmas letter of 1955 puts this into perspective for us. And he quotes several passages of scripture, after which he then says that it has moved him to raise his consciousness. He states, by faith or spiritual awareness, we know that the inner invisible is infinite, and that therefore the world of creation is infinite, forever unfolding and disclosing itself in infinite form and variety, character and nature. Because of the infinite nature of the invisible, we spiritually discern infinite nature of creation and never become dependent upon anything that has form. Because knowing its source and realizing the infinite nature of the source, we are enabled to understand the infinity of the creation of form. The source or substance of all creation is the infinite, invisible soul or spirit. And through this understanding, we realize that there is nothing of a destructive or evil nature in creation. A few years later, in his 1959 Christmas letter, he explained it further. At the moment of the conception and birth of the Christ in you, you pass from being an ordinary human being to living in the soul. The mind takes on its proper function as an instrument to be used, just as you use your body as a vehicle for your expression and activity. When you make that transition in consciousness, you do not lose your body. However, it continually appears to improve in accord with your improved concept of it. You are never without a body, just as you are never without a mind. But now both body and the mind become instruments of the soul. The soul imparts itself to you through the mind, and then the body carries out its orders and performs the functions of beings. Every phase of your life is lived through the spirit which emanates from the deep within you. That is the meaning of the Immaculate Conception. It is the conception of the Christ in your consciousness and its birth as a transformed life. When you get there, you will begin to live from the point of cause, not effect. You will begin to live from the standpoint of spirit, not material. No longer will you look at life and say, things have gone bad over here. I am a natural born loser. Oh no, the Christ within takes over and says, you can do something about that. And that is your Christmas message. That's the message for Charlie Brown. That's the message from Joel Goldsmith. That's the message from Jesus of Nazareth. When you realize and come to the conclusion that you are infinite, that you do not live from the basis of effect or what you see as having already been created, but live from the standpoint of cause, meaning that you go within and can create the very causes and conditions you would like to see in your daily lives, then you know the birth of the Christ consciousness has appeared within you. In the night, with the stars on high, with the angels announcing it, with shepherds in the field, and it will come when you are low, when you are in a lowly estate, when you are in the manger, when you're feeling outside, apart from, depressed, and wondering what on earth all the conditions are that confront you. Look for it at that point. Cry out like Charlie Brown. Can anybody explain this to me? Cry out like the lawyer asking God to assist him. Cry out for the spirit within you to appear, for it is here, and it is here now, and it will change you, and it will change your life. That is guaranteed. Let's take a few moments now to have a nice period of a Christmas meditation. Let's close our eyes. Sit up straight, sit still. Have a cleansing breath in and let it go. Let all thoughts in your mind just go away. After what we've heard, can we now go back to our old way of living? Are we not inspired to go the other way? The other way, like the wise men who would not return to Herod or materiality? Are we not inspired to go the other way, towards spirit and truth? Have you seen the child? Have you seen this babe in the manger? Can you feel one with it? Can you feel the strength of this new idea? Can you feel the power inside you that this new being brings? Can you feel the new idea that life is spirit, not material? That life is cause, not effect? That you're bringing forth new ideas into expression, although they will be met with difficulty at first, you can keep on. For here we are in the manger. It is you and me as one. So let us sing and dance and laugh and love, shall we? Let us bring forth good always to be shared. Don't judge each other. Let's be kind. We are God's perfection. Let us remain united together in love. Amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his light to shine upon you. Turn within now. Acknowledge him. He will raise your consciousness and give you his peace. Amen. Christmas. Thank you for coming.